This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The current legislative session in Little Rock is something like the month of March. In like a lamb, out like a lion. The first weeks were slow, but we have had a flurry at the end. To help us keep up, Roby Brock of TalkBusiness.net joins me on the phone. Roby, is it correct we've got a flurry at the end?
Yeah, to me, it's a little bit more reminiscent of Groundhog Day. It just keeps playing over and over and over and over again. Yeah, there's been a lot of action here in these final days, supposedly final days of the legislative session.
Well, to be fair, when you and I first talked way back in early January, some people thought this might be a quiet session. But you did point out there would be a lot on the table. And so far, a lot has been discussed. Budget, highways, things like that.
Yeah, it has been a pretty busy and an active session. There was a big to-do list for this legislature, from everything from their normal functions of balancing the budget to a lot of tax cut talk, and that has certainly materialized in a lot of different forms. Highway program, the health care implementation at the state, which is tripping up here at the end. And then congressional redistricting, as well as prison reform. So there were some really, really big to-do items on the list. And they've gotten through some of the big ones. They still have two big ones remaining.
Well, you mentioned health care, and we all knew that that could be something that would be very contentious. Not many people were using the words insurance department back in January. Not many people thought funding the insurance department would be one of the controversial things.
Well, you know, of course, I'll pat myself on the back for saying I knew that it would come that way. But, I don't think anybody really understood how it would kind of play out. But the state insurance department has the regulatory authority to implement federal health care reform at the state level. So the funding for that implementation program is coming through the insurance department. It's a $1 million federal grant. That will help set up these health insurance exchanges, which are basically the Travelocity of health insurance. Consumers can go to it and compare and shop for different health care plans and rates. And because of the political dynamics of health care reform, it is, it's a dirty word to conservative voters. They are opposed to it at the federal level. They don't want anything to do with it here at the state level. And with the way that Arkansas's laws are set up, and a budget appropriation bill has to get a supermajority of 75 votes in the House of Representatives, and I think it has to get 27 in the Senate. We're still down in the House end trying to get that supermajority of 3/4. They've gotten to 70, but they're having trouble getting to 75, so that budget is held up.
What happens if the 75 votes never materialize in the House?
Well, you know, things could kind of cut a couple of different ways. The minority, primarily of Republicans, there's one Democrat that is opposed to it as well, have said if you'll take the $1 million out of the bill, we'll pass the whole $154 million insurance department budget. They don't have a problem with any other part of the insurance department budget. The governor and insurance department commissioner Jay Bradford say, look, we're under a federal mandate until Congress repeals health care or the U.S. Supreme Court overturns health care to go forward with this. And I think that there is a sentiment, too, that regardless of what happens with federal health care reform, a lot of states have looked to doing these health insurance exchanges regardless of whether or not the federal government wants them to or not. In some states, such as Utah, for example, a very conservative state, they have done this, but primarily used private health insurance dollars to set it all up. So if it doesn't pass, you could have the governor take a principled stand and say they chose not to fund the insurance department. We're shutting that down, which would shut down the criminal investigation unit, the consumer protection unit, all of the licensing. You'd have companies in as small as one-man health insurance companies, as well as Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and Farm Bureau, the big giants, not be licensed to do business in this state. That's kind of the threat that the governor is using. On the other hand, like I said, the Republican minority has said, just take that $1 million out and we're fine with it. But the governor and insurance commissioner don't feel that that's an option.
Well, I mean, is someone finally going to, I hate to use the cliche blink, but someone's going to have to do something. The alternative seems, I don't know, catastrophic or certainly dramatic.
Yeah, I think this is a real big political game of chicken right now. I'm not sure who is going to back down first. We have seen, initially, the first time this bill came up for a vote, it only received 53 votes and needed 75. So you've had 17 Republicans change their mind on their initial vote on this because they do understand that that they're holding up this budget process, and that while they don't like it, they're holding their nose and voting for it. They've agreed, I guess, in principle, that the governor's position is enough for them to say, we made a statement, but we've got to get this done to continue to function as state government. But a lot of these other legislators who are voting against it, they are their first-timers, most of them, and they ran on a platform of opposing federal health care reform, and they feel that that's what swept them into office, and it's what their constituents are telling them, that they want them to stop health care any way possible, and I don't see them budging on this.
Well, moving from that to another conversation-inducing topic, the redistricting. The plan to extend that curved, what people are calling the Fayetteville finger, the fourth into Northwest Arkansas, that has been altered somewhat. People can see the revised map at talkbusiness.net. Do you think we'll have resolution on that within the next day?
Well, I wouldn't put my next paycheck on that. I really don't. I think it is going to be very, very, very dicey whether or not they've got 51 votes in the House to move that forward. And if they do, I'm not sure they have a majority of votes in the Senate to make that happen. And it certainly has to go through a Senate committee, although it could be extracted from that committee, the State Agencies Committee, which is split 4 Republicans and 4 Democrats. And there does not seem to be any support for that plan among the Republicans in the Senate. So I think that that is going to be a very dramatic vote take place later today in the House. We'll see if it moves forward from there. The interesting thing about that whole congressional redistricting debate is the adjournment resolution that the legislature has put together allows them to come back into session to finish their business up at the very end to deal with congressional redistricting. So they could, if they could get the budget stuff taken care of before Friday, before tomorrow, they could adjourn without a congressional redistricting plan and spend the next couple of weeks trying to work it out privately and come back in on the final day when they sine die and officially adjourn, and they could deal with it then. It would be pretty unprecedented, but that possibility exists, and I kind of think they may wind up doing that if they can't find at least a small majority of votes to move the plan forward.
Of course, discussion about the redistricting is a hot topic here up here in the 3rd District. Any idea whether people in the 1st or 4th are paying as much attention or any attention to the redistricting?
I don't think they're paying as much attention as people in Fayetteville are, obviously, because it has been the centerpiece of this Fayetteville to the 4th plan, the Fayetteville finger, the redrawn map we saw yesterday takes it back through the pig trail, which coins the phrase the pig trail gerrymander. I kind of even think it looks like the Fayetteville crooked finger now because it's got a little hook to it. So it's not getting as much attention in other parts of the state as it is up in Fayetteville. But if you're in one of these counties, it's kind of on the border that's either going to be split or moved into another congressional district. There are some people coming up to the Capitol and testifying when these bills are presented, typically in opposition to it. Nobody likes change. And so, it's certainly been a hot topic of debate this week. It's been for weeks up there in Northwest Arkansas, and I think it will continue for the next couple of days. And if they can't resolve it, I think it may be a topic of debate for some weeks to come.
Roby Rock is the editor and publisher of TalkBusiness.net. Follow the page today. I'm sure there will be some updates as you continue to spend the day at the Capitol, right?
I'm hoping that we can find a few other things to talk about today. But, yes, congressional redistricting and this insurance department bill will certainly be something we'll be monitoring.
Thanks, Roby.
You're welcome, Kyle.
And more from the 88th General Assembly. Arkansas charter school accountability and limits have been considered by lawmakers this session. Several measures passed through committee, one unanimously, indicating increasing political support for public school choice. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
16 charter schools currently operate in Arkansas. Doesn't sound like much compared to more than 1,100 traditional public schools around the state. Charter schools are open enrollment public schools of choice. Students opt to attend. Some are accelerated, rigorous math and science-based college prep schools, while others are more concentrated on the humanities. Others exist to help impoverished and underserved communities. In Arkansas, charter schools are funded with tax dollars, but excluded from receiving millage, facilities funding, or transportation fees. Special federal startup dollars, as well as foundations and donations, help cover the balance. The Arkansas Department of Education maintains charter oversight, and the state legislature creates charter laws. This session, SB 436, the Charter School Accountability Act, passed the state Senate and this week progressed through the House. Introduced as a shell bill by Democratic Senator Jimmy Jeffries of Crossett, it was later sponsored by Republican Senator Gilbert Baker of Conway. Misty Newcomb is Director of Outreach for the Department of Education Reform at the University of Arkansas.
It does two things. It provides some more freedom and protection for charter schools, but it also provides some more accountability for them. So there's some of the same protections that are already afforded to our traditional public schools as far as lawsuits and things like that are concerned are now provided to charter schools. It also ensures that they receive their categorical funding in the year that students who are eligible for that categorical funding are enrolled.
So, for example, English language learner, special education, and federal NSLA funding for low-income student academic support will be released in the year the student is enrolled. Misty Newcomb's been in Little Rock this session, monitoring various education committees and bills, including several charter school measures. She and her colleagues at the University of Arkansas provide unbiased research findings to Arkansas policymakers and education leaders. She said the accountability measure also does away with the requirement for any charter school applicant to go before a public school district.
Now they can still do that if they want, but they have the option of going straight to the Board of Education. And since in every case the charter eventually has to appeal to the State Board of Education, it's just a way to expedite the process.
However, the bill requires more accountability in the form of reporting requirements, including annual reports on student mobility, why certain students leave or are expelled. It also removes specific applicant advertising requirements and allows students to remain on waiting lists, which were turned over annually. Several charter management organizations, or CMOs, operate in Arkansas. For example, KIPP Delta Public Schools. KIPP, or Knowledge is Power Program, is a nationwide network of college prep schools specifically designed to close the achievement gap among low-income students in poor districts. Once a charter school is approved and established after 1 year, staff can begin to recruit.
Previously, only KIPPs could expand in the state, but this bill opens that up where it's not exclusively KIPP schools, but schools that have under an evaluation have improved academic performance of the students that it's in there and have proved to be financially stable. Those schools can request a license that would allow them to expand beyond just one campus, but to other campuses in the state.
In Northwest Arkansas, we have Haas Hall Academy, a college prep charter school in Fayetteville, and Benton County School of the Arts, a K-12 institution in Rogers. The bill also exempts charters from first-year auditing by the state and allows the charters to hire their own auditors. One other charter school measure, SB 346, also sponsored by Senator Gilbert Baker, would remove limitation of the number of open enrollment charter schools in Arkansas to a sort of complicated sliding scale.
The cap is currently set at 24. They removed the cap I can't actually give you a real specific number because The language in the bill says once the charter count gets to within two charters from the cap. So right now it's at 24. Once it gets to 22, we can increase by 5. And when that happens again, we have the option of then increasing by 5. So it's not just a blanket removal of the cap. It's it gives a little bit more control to the State Board of Education and to the governor to remove that cap.
Some CMOs operate in elementary, middle, and high school, which require 3 separate charters. That's one reason to remove the cap, Newcomb says.
This helps the state recruit some of those high-quality organizations. The surrounding states have either removed their caps or have greatly expanded the cap. And so that puts that gives us less of a competitive edge if we have a cap in recruiting those high-quality CMOs. And that one of the things that those high-quality CMOs are looking at before they move into a state is what type of charter school laws are there, how much freedom will they have. And so that's why this issue still receives a lot of attention, even though we're quite a ways from the cap.
The Arkansas School Board Association, as well as the Arkansas Association of Educational Administrators, support increased accountability, but stood in opposition to lifting the cap. Arkansas Association of Education Administrators Executive Director, Dr. Richard Abernathy.
And this just simply says that once you get within close to that 24 number, then the cap automatically goes up 5. And then the next time it goes up, and you get close to that number. So ultimately, there is no cap on charter schools anymore. But Arkansas has never really had approached the charter school limit at this point in time. You know, maybe they will, maybe they won't. And I think if they do an effective job, just like everything else, the proof will be on the results. And if they do receive good quality results, and I think you'll see those numbers go up, and if you don't, then I think the state board demonstrated very clearly what they'll do. They'll close down ineffective charter schools.
Abernathy says charter schools, which, by the way, are represented in his association, are designed to test the limits of innovation, so it can set certain rules which traditional public schools can't. So some inequities may exist, he said. He seeks a level playing field among all public schools. But he says if a child receives a quality education via charter schooling, he supports that. And despite limits on charter schools being lifted, Misty Newcomb says we should not expect a surge of charter schools in the state under the new law.
Because of the rigor or the diligence, whatever you would like to call it, that the state board uses when determining who can be approved, it's unlikely that the state of Arkansas is going to be inundated with charter schools. They're very quick to close them, and it's very hard to open one in the state of Arkansas. So I think what we're going to see, and I think that really what this bill sets up, is more charter management organizations. It makes it easier for established charter management organizations, and those are organizations like many have heard of KIPP or of the schools in Harlem, the Harlem Village Academies. Many have heard great reports about these schools, and these are large national organizations that have perfected replicating charter schools to an art, and they can go in and they have a formula and they have a system and they have the resources to set up new charter schools without a lot of the challenges that what you might call a mom and pop organization would have. And so this bill, in my opinion, sets it up to recruit those types of organizations into the state of Arkansas.
Opponents of charter schools say they are pulling the best and the brightest from traditional public schools and that they may also culturally segregate. But Misty Newcomb says research indicates otherwise.
I think that with charter schools, what they offer, the potential that's there, is that we could actually have schools that are not restricted to your zip code, that where kids from lower performing schools or from lower performing schools could move from those schools to a higher performing school in a way that you don't actually see in the traditional system. And so, yes, there's variation in the types of kids that attend these charter schools, there's variation in the types of schools that attend public schools. I think the difference with charter schools is that there's an opportunity for kids who are in a low-performing school to come to a higher-performing school. Charter schools offer that opportunity in a way that the traditional system has not yet done.
Misty Newcomb says the charter school movement is new in Arkansas, and families are still learning about their existence and purpose. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And Senate Bill 346, which would remove limitations on the number of open enrollment charter schools, did pass 55-28, while Senate Bill 436 to amend various provisions of Arkansas law concerning public charter schools also passed by a margin of 85-4. It is the final day of March. April is coming up, and we have a full docket at Walton Arts Center. Here to help explain what all is happening is Jody Beznoska, Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Hello.
You ready for April?
I am ready for April.
Okay.
Tomorrow's April Fool's, so.
Yes. Are you a prankster?
No, I'm not.
Nor am I.
But I kind of wish I was, because it would definitely be entertaining. We don't have any pranksters in the office either. I might have to fix that. Okay.
Well. You have been warned.
Yes. All the staff have been warned. But yes, we are we're in the midst of 100 years of Broadway at Walton Arts Center. That opened on Tuesday, mm-hmm. and it plays through Sunday. And as I expected, people are really enjoying this. It's taking them by surprise a little bit. They're not 100% certain what to expect, but we're hearing lots of happy people as they're walking out. Apparently, the five singers have terrific voices, and they're doing a mix of classics and favorites. They're singing some songs from next year's lineup of Broadway, and we had local singers with them on Tuesday night, which was great. But this has been fun, and I think lots of people are being pleasantly surprised by it. So it runs through Sunday. This is Neil Berg's 100 Years of Broadway. It's a Broadway review show, basically. There's a show tonight at 7 p.m., a show Friday at 8 p.m., two shows on Saturday, and two shows on Sunday.
So matinees on Saturday and Sunday.
Correct.
Evening. Okay.
Yeah. So lots of chances to see it. And I really recommend it. The tickets are pretty affordable, and it's going to surprise you. It's going to be a fun, if you like Broadway, you're going to appreciate it. So. And then on Tuesday at 7:30 p.m., we have a special event with the Washington Regional Foundation. It's their yearly gala that they hold at Walton Arts Center every year. And they will feature the band Little Big Town. That's at 7:30 on Tuesday. Little Big Town was on Conan the other night, mm-hmm. which was exciting. And then Thursday, that's the 7th of April at 7 p.m., we will have Compañía Nacional de Danza 2, which is the Spanish dance company, and they are part of our 10x10 art series. So we'll have a pre-show conversation at 6 o'clock, followed by the show at 7, followed by a post-show conversation immediately after the show.
Most tickets are $10.
Most tickets are $10, and they're selling pretty well. So we're looking forward to another full house. 10x10 has been incredibly successful this year, especially for dance. And so it's been really exciting to see full houses for dance programming, because it's a little tough to come by these days. But it's been fantastic. So that's 7 p.m. on Thursday, the 7th. Then on Saturday the 9th, we have the Canadian Tenors. That's a 2 p.m. show. And as we mentioned last week, that's also our volunteer appreciation concert. And the Canadian Tenors are a really hot group. And you know, we've had some great vocalists at Walton Arts Center this year. And I think these guys will just continue that tradition.
And that's a Saturday afternoon performance.
Saturday afternoon show, 2 p.m. And then the next day, Sunday the 10th, we have the double billing of the John Pizzarelli Group and the Kurt Elling Group.
10x10?
10x10. $10 for these two amazing jazz musicians. Again, that's at 7 p.m. So there'll be a 6 p.m. creative conversation and a post-show party. And then that will be it for the 10x10 series for the 10-11 season, but we will, of course, bring it back next year. So then on Monday, we have a cooking event in Walton Arts Center Star Theater. This is called Chopped in the Ozarks, where we'll feature four chefs from around the region. They will be given a basket of unusual ingredients and be told to make something with that.
That's Monday the 11th.
Monday the 11th, 6:30 p.m. in Star Theater. Tuesday the 12th, David Sedaris at 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. Fabulous comedian and writer who you've heard on This American Life and on NPR all the time. This will be his third time back in probably 4 years. But he has a new book out, Squirrel Seeks Chipmunk, mm-hmm. and he will be signing books and meeting and greeting people after the show. He always stays and signs everybody's book. It's really, really great. That's Tuesday the 12th at 7 p.m. And then I just wanted to get a couple more events on people's calendars. I know it's hard to think 2 weeks out, but on the 15th of April, we have two shows that night. We have a concert with Augusta Reed Thomas, who is a visiting professor at the University of Arkansas. She has written a piece that has been commissioned for the university, and it will be performed by the music groups there. There'll be choral groups there. There'll be students from local schools involved. It's going to be a very big night of classical and symphonic music, so that's going to be great. And Theater Squared opens its final show of the season on the 15th. The show's at 7:30, and this one is called Reasons to Be Pretty, which is a hot new show that just came off of out of New York, which I think is going to be super. And then one last one that I think may have gotten a little buried this year in all of our programming, but it's going to be really artistically great. On the 17th of April at 7 p.m., we have a concert called American Legacies, and it's the Del McCoury Band.
Oh, yes.
With the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, which is just awesome. Just such a great blend of different types of music. And I got to hear a sampling of this at a conference about a year and a half ago in New York, and it was so much fun. It was the combination of the Del McCoury twanginess mm-hmm. with this wonderful brass New Orleans sound of the Preservation Hall Jazz Band. And man, it was great. And this is going to be a really, really good show. And so that is on the 17th of...
That's a Sunday.
I believe that is a Sunday, yes.
Because Monday the 18th is tax day this
that's
year.
That's right.
Yes.
So celebrate that you've done your taxes and go see Del McCoury.
Or procrastinate
just a little bit more. happy to help you with both of those.
That's right.
So mark your calendars for that one, because that's just going to be fantastic.
WaltonArtsCenter.org.
Or 443-5600 for tickets.
Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.
This week's Wait, Wait might actually be good for you. It's a special health show with enjoyable new diseases, innovative diet techniques, entertaining side effects, and Dave Barry complaining about his toilet. If our show lasts more than 4 hours this week, call your doctor. Join us for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large, Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com discusses new jobs headed to Fort Smith, and the Thursday edition of Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor. And tomorrow on Ozarks, more from the 88th General Assembly, lacrosse in Bentonville, and an effort to make dental services available to more people in Northwest Arkansas. That's tomorrow on Ozarks. Here are just a few items we think you should know about today. A new report indicates the healthiest counties in Arkansas are in the western half of the state. The counties with the least healthy populations are in the eastern half of the state. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation collaborated with the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute to develop the rankings for each state's counties. The report ranks Benton and Washington as the first and second healthiest counties in the state, respectively. Madison, Newton, and Franklin counties are also in the top 10. Almost all of the counties ranked in the bottom fourth when it comes to health are east of Little Rock. The study considered availability of clinical care, exercise routines of residents, and health behaviors in creating the rankings. You can see the rankings for Arkansas and every state at countyhealthrankings.org. The Classical Studies Honorary Society at the University of Arkansas is sponsoring a musical performance of Homer's Odyssey April 7th, that's a week from tonight, in the Greek Theater on the University of Arkansas campus at 6. Joe Goodkin, described by organizers of the event as a classicist and musician, will be in Fayetteville for a single performance. His production will probably be as close to a modern English-speaking audience can come to the original performance of the Greek epic, which was sung to audiences to the accompaniment of a stringed instrument 3,000 years ago. The 30-minute performance on the 7th tells the story of Homer in 24 short songs. No epics sung or recited, but a Ferris wheel at the park at West End tomorrow in Fort Smith. The park at the west end of Garrison Avenue will open for the season at 4 tomorrow afternoon. Rides on the vintage carousel and Ferris wheel will be $1. The park will be open Fridays and Saturdays through the end of May, then expand operating hours for the summer. And speaking of summer, it will feel a bit closer when the Northwest Arkansas Naturals host an open house of sorts Monday night at the Northwest Arkansas Mall. The season for the reigning Texas League champions begins later next week at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale, but fans Monday night can meet the players on the 2011 edition of the Nats from 6 until 7 near the center court of the mall. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He's the editor of the CityWire.com that covers business, culture, politics, and more for the Fort Smith region. Michael, I trust you had a very good spring break?
Yes. Nice and relaxing over in Eureka. Of course, we have this thing called the internet, so we're always working, but I did have a spring break. Hope you did as well.
I took a day off and went to the track at Oaklawn. And so,
were the horses kind to you?
The horses, I had no problem with. It was those people taking my money at the betting window that didn't give anything back.
That's right. They're narrow that way.
That's right. Talking about giving back, it looks like Golden Living is going to have some jobs for Fort Smith.
Yes, they announced Wednesday morning that they hope to add at least 200 jobs. The CEO Neil Kurtz kept during the press conference stressing that that's a minimum. He hopes to add more than 200 jobs. But I don't know if your listeners remember back early in March, about March 10th, the company announced they're moving their corporate operations, their management operations, to Plano, Texas, just north of Dallas. So, and they teased at the time that the Fort Smith building would become an administrative center and would probably add jobs. So they're roughly at about 675 jobs now. And within 24 months, within 2 years, they hope to be up to at least 875 jobs here. And they're closing down some offices or reducing the size of offices in Atlanta and Birmingham and Pittsburgh and a few other places to bring those jobs here. So with 9.2% unemployment in the area, that's any news like this is very welcome news.
I was going to say, the last few times you and I have had conversations about jobs, it has not been about the addition of them, so that is welcome news for the area.
Right. Yes, we. I know some people in the media think we like, or some people think we in the media like to report bad news, but, you know, after reporting increasing unemployment for the past almost 3 years, it gets really old.
There is a media shield law in Arkansas, has been for some time, but what is different, or what will be different, pending Governor Beebe's signature, is that journalists like you will be included in that media shield law.
Yeah, journalists like me. but what I like to say, though, Kyle, I'm not really a journalist. What I do is just kinetic reporting action.
Not really
journalism. Yes, the shield law, the last time the shield law was updated was 1947, and the existing law prior to this session didn't even include television reporters.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I saw the bill, which was SB 772, filed by Senator Jake Files, and when I first read it, it said the addition was to add television stations or internet news source, and I thought, you mean TV stations technically hadn't been protected under the shield law in Arkansas?
Well, no. And, you know, when Senator Files, of course, he's here from Fort Smith, and this whole subject came up, I was trying to learn more about Arkansas's FOI law, and I was talking to Max Brantley in Little Rock, and he mentioned something off the cuff about the shield law. And so I looked into it and saw that it didn't include, and to be honest with you, I didn't even notice it didn't include television. I didn't notice it didn't include internet news sources. So I asked Senator Files to look into it. I didn't even know if it was necessary, Kyle. It may have been that the law covered us anyway. But anyway, the attorneys from the Arkansas legislature said, well, it probably wouldn't hurt to update it. So Senator Files moved it through the process, and now it includes us internet folks as well as television journalists. And what it does is basically protects us from being forced to testify about our sources unless we've been somehow negligent, but it protects us from that forced testimony.
And you say you're not sure it was needed, but push comes to shove, it's nice to have it in there, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, as much gray area as you can remove from any law, I think that's always a good thing.
There is as I think we've talked about before, a downtown development bill possibility, but the possibility that it might be law is waning.
Right, and there are just a few days left in the session. It's unfortunate, really. It's the second time Representative Tracy Pinnartz of Fort Smith also she's tried to push this through. And it's not just a Fort Smith bill. Some people have said that, but there are downtown development groups all over the state. She has about 59 organizations trying to support her on this bill. And essentially what it does, Kyle, is it just creates a tax credit. If you develop in a established downtown district and you meet certain codes, you meet certain development codes, and you can get a tax credit. And that's been the hang-up. The, you know, Governor Beebe and some of the legislative leaders have had to agree on how much tax breaks or tax credits or tax cuts they're willing to give. And in the 2009 session, Representative Pinard's bill didn't make that agreed-upon tax cut package, and it didn't this year as well. So two consecutive sessions, that bill has not gone through. And I'm more fascinated that it doesn't go through because it has more broad-based support than some of the other tax cut bills. But it gets caught up in kind of a no-man's land because it's hard for some people to understand the incentive structure behind the bill.
Now, it did receive approval, did it not, from one of the chambers?
Oh, it's received overwhelming approval each year from the House. The year before, it had a 94-0 vote, and I think this year was a 93-0 vote for it. But it gets bogged down in the Senate every time. And not that the Senate's killing, it's just that by the time it usually winds its way through the process, it is in the Senate during the last part of the session, and that's when the tax cut deals have already been made. And often that Senate Revenue and Tax Committee is where, and even on the House side also, is where bills will die if they're not part of the agreed-upon tax cut package or tax benefit or tax incentive package.
And I imagine in the atmosphere we have in 2011, when you get late in the session, it's hard to find many seat holders in the House or Senate on either side who are then going to be talking about tax credits, at this late state.
Well, that's true. I mean, most of the legislative leaders have already agreed across party lines and with the governor's office. These are the tax bills that we will support. And, Representative Pinard has told me that she's had many legislators come up and say, this is a great bill, keep pushing it. But, we have an agreement and we can't do it this year. So it's just part of the process. And it's an interesting, for political geeks like me, it's an interesting part of the process.
Michael Tilley is the editor of the City Wire, which covers politics, culture, business, and much more for the Fort Smith region. And he did not have Virginia Commonwealth playing Butler in the Final Four, correct?
I had none of my Kyle. I don't think I got to the 16 with any of my picks.
Okay. Well, between my horse betting and your picks for the bracket, people shouldn't take our advice when trying to gain financially in the sports world.
That's absolutely true.
Michael, thanks as always.
All right. Talk to you later.
It's the last day of March 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And it's my last day doing this segment. No, I'm kidding. Tomorrow's April Fool's Day.
Well, it doesn't count if you... On March 31st, that's just a lie. That's not a prank.
It would be fun today.
All right.
It's really not. It's all right.
Okay.
But you should have seen his face. All right, tonight.
Yes.
Not kidding. The Tartan Tenors concert.
Yes.
Based on the popularity of tenors.
I mean, we have the Canadian tenors who are coming to Walton Arts Center, the Tartan Tenors. There's another group called the Three Tenors.
These are clearly tenors that do Scottish music.
Right.
7 o'clock at the Van Buren Arts Center, $15.
Excellent.
471-4017. And Fayetteville High School opens a classic musical.
Yes.
Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Mm-hmm.
At 7 o'clock tonight. Runs all weekend. Tickets are $12 to $15. If you've never seen one of Warren Rosenauer's shows, you've missed out. Don't think this is high school theater.
Right. He is an accomplished actor, educator, and he directs the shows at FHS.
And you really, like I said, don't think this is high school theater. And we're going to plan a little for the weekend.
Do it.
Because there are many things going on. Saturday, it's spring.
Mm-hmm.
The Fayetteville Farmers Market opens.
That's right. Yes, it's officially now spring. Right.
With a kickoff with the mayor at 9 o'clock. The Spring Gem Mineral and Jewelry Show, hosted by the Northwest Arkansas Gem and Mineral Society, is from 9 to 6 on Saturday at the Siloam Springs Community Center.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect I may spend some money there.
There's a tour of trails on Saturday at 11:30.
Right.
With the mayor.
I was going to say, Mayor Lionel Jordan of Fayetteville's on that as well.
Starts at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Right across the street.
There's a community read discussion at the Fayetteville Public Library at 1 about the book The Blue Zone. And all sorts of other reading things going on Saturday, so if you're looking for that. And an interesting program at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale at 2 o'clock on the history of Ozark midwifery with midwife Sean House.
Okay.
So we'll
that's
have
free,
more.
I bet.
That's free, and we'll have more tomorrow.
For real?
For real.
Honest, okay. Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Dr. Rosalie Walker-Russell, Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Academy of the Arts. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here today.
Last couple of times we talked, it was in anticipation of Gospel Fest 2011.
That's right.
How'd it go?
Oh, my goodness. Gospel Fest 2011 was one of the most rewarding, one of the greatest events I have ever been involved in, and it was just hugely successful. We had over 2,000 people, some 300 people on stage, plus an audience of over 1,900. So, I mean, it was incredible. We filled Harvest Time Tabernacle and just had a wonderful time.
And great money raised for the Academy?
Yes, we did. We raised, we've had close to $30,000 come in, counting ticket sales, plus monies that have come in after the concert. So that part was hugely successful as well. Great scholarship money for kids.
And as anybody knows, when you're in the arts, you finish one show and you gear up for the next.
You gear up for the next. And, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about Gospel Fest today is I specifically wanted to thank everyone who was involved. 300 people is a lot of people to be involved on stage, counting your soloists, all of your choirs, all of the music ministers involved, the live band. So I personally wanted to thank everybody who participated in this concert. Everybody did a fantastic job. I mean, the emotional energy in that room from start to finish was incredible. And it was just a fun night for all involved. But more than that, I wanted to thank the audience for coming. I mean, 2,000 people came, and I think we all collectively had a fun night together. As a matter of fact, I know we had fun because we did a survey that evening, and we've had a pretty major response to that survey, and we're about to finish putting the whole survey together. But what I do know from that survey at this point is everyone that turned that survey in, I mean everyone, collectively said, yes, we want this to become an annual event. And so we had 100% response to that. We also, from what I know of that survey, the responses were that we need to have more Gaither music, more Southern gospel. We had a men's gospel quartet that just, I mean, they took the house down. And then more Black gospel. Mm-hmm. So we're getting some great responses to that survey. So I want to thank everyone for doing the survey, and I want to thank everyone for coming and supporting an event like this. We've had a great response from UA Fort Smith, from the Chancellor and Miss Barron. They were both in attendance. Some of our other administrators were there. Everyone has, been so positive about this that should the university approve an event such as this yearly, we will do it.
Did any of the surveys say, what about bluegrass? You know, that high lonesome sound. That's what I like.
I haven't gotten that far
yet.
Okay. I'll be looking for the bluegrass in the
survey. Fair enough. You have the Distinguished Artist Series approaching.
That's correct. Coming up Monday evening, April 11th. Well, first of all, I should back up and say Friday evening, February 11th, back when we were buried under snow, we were to have this concert. And it was the Night of Musical Theater with Gilbert and Sullivan's excerpts from Mikado. And so we have moved that event to Monday evening, April 11th, 7:30, Breedlove Auditorium on the UA Fort Smith campus. If you have a ticket already, it's good for that evening, and we're trying to get the word out because many people do have tickets already. Many people have called in to say, when is that concert, or is that going to be rescheduled? Well, it is. So we hope that everyone will come out for that. It's part of our UA Fort Smith Academy of the Arts Distinguished Artist Series that we do in connection with the music department. So we're really excited about it. It's going to be a great night.
So it's on your calendar. Just change that 2 in the 211 to a 4.
To 4. Okay. 411. Yes. Same time, same place.
And tickets are available?
Tickets are available online at www.uafortsmith.edu. You can call the box office, Campus Center box office, at 479-788-7300. And you can also get tickets at the door that night. And tickets are just $10. There are 7 to 10 faculty, university faculty guests. We have a guest, Peter Hine, who's a tenor Barry Law is singing. We have the Academy Arts Chorale singing with these singers. We have music faculty, Dr. Edward White, Dr. Kay White, Miss Nancy Mathis, Dr. Rager Moore, Dr. Elizabeth Moman.
You've got the vocal faculty
right there. Yeah. All of the singers coming out at once.
So it's kind of a faculty recital, too.
Kind of. It's just a nice performance
exactly.
of musical theater by all of these wonderful singers. I mean, they're the greatest singers around. So, you know, we're excited to put them all together at one evening.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Dr. Rosalie Walker Russell is the Executive Director of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith's Academy of the Arts. This is Ozarks at Large.
While Libya commands international attention, the war in Afghanistan continues. The civilian counterpart to General Petraeus ends his tour there in a couple weeks, and he looks back.
The sort of the highlight, really, I found, and it's almost in the last few weeks, is when I'm out on the ground in Afghanistan and just seeing the difference in the attitude of the people.
The high and the low points in Afghanistan on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Morning edition tomorrow morning from 5 until 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM, your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. That's just about all the time we have for this edition of Ozarks at Large for the final day of March 2011. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Lowell, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online for free at KUAF.com. In fact, KUAF offers several different signals for you to enjoy and many ways for you to enjoy them. You're aware of this station, obviously, 91.3 FM. We also have KUAF2, a 24-hour-a-day classical music channel, and KUAF3, a channel devoted to news and talk programs. These signals, as well as the digital version of this FM broadcast, can be heard for free on any HD radio or internet radio, for free online with the KUAF pop-up player at KUAF.com, and for free with the NPR app on your Android phone, or for free on your iPhone with the KUAF app. If you want any more information about the KUAF channels and how you can listen to them for free, you can go to our website, KUAF.com. And Apple Seeds Incorporated, in partnership with the Fayetteville Public Schools, will continue its series of free cooking classes with the fourth class Monday night at 6 at Root Elementary in Fayetteville. You do not need to have an affiliation with the school to attend. For more information, appleseedinc.org. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF 91.3 FM. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for tuning in. Another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon on KUAF. Have a great Thursday.